so great to hear his first song being Ladysmith, Black Mambazo. Hoodoos, Mr. CEO. Great chat. Thanks. I'm inspired. Bye.
Thank you. Here's another
one. Gasing watch a lot of Cocomelon, because both those stories is talking about a very popular songs on Cocomelon. Does he have young children? Because we watch a lot of that also at home. We obviously love it because, oh, the lessons are just so fundamental. You know, when he started talking about the hare and the tortoise, I immediately thought of the song in my head. And we also like the one with the grasshopper that's spending a lot of time do-do-da-dee-da-dee-da-dee-da-do. Dancing and then hungers at the end. But what a phenomenal man, I just wanted to say. Really, really inspirational. Thank you, Clement. It's Lindile in Sandton.
Ah, thank you, Lindile. Guess who just sent me a WhatsApp voice note, Mr. Not voice note, but texted me on WhatsApp. Vincent Magwenya, who is now the spokesperson for the presidency, and he said, I must pass his greetings to you. Apparently, you are his former boss.
I was indeed.
Yeah.
And
why did he leave you? What did you do?
He left us. I don't think we did anything wrong. I think he wanted to take on the entrepreneurial path, which was a good thing at the time. But I did say to him then, and I say it again now, he was a bloody fool for leaving us.
Yeah, and I told him on WhatsApp that, I'll send the greetings, but he's still annoyed that you left. And he says, yeah, he will never forgive me.
Exactly.
How do you feel, Mr. Chabalala, about the state of the country right now? Because it really can be difficult to be optimistic, even for the most optimistic people, in the face of whether it's the brazen crime that we witness, this load shedding, the sluggish economy, spiraling unemployment, high inflation, GBV, policing and intelligence failures, and. There's a lot going on. And I think what probably also makes it worse is when you have a leadership that is not present and awake to these realities. What are your reflections? Are you optimistic, or do you sometimes sit and think, we're in trouble here?
Clement, the answer is not straightforward. It's complicated. Like everybody, I get despondent. Driving here was a nightmare, being caught in traffic. I didn't use any expletives, but it was horrible driving here, going through those robots, which were where the lights were out. Looking at the levels of corruption makes you just want to cry. Look at the violence. It makes you really, really despondent. But I come from a tradition that believes in natural law. I believe that if you just follow basic principles, you do the right thing, things will be all right. You may think I'm a fool in believing that, but I genuinely believe it. That's the first thing. The second one is I believe in trying to see things glass half full. So being realistic about the negativity, as I've just pointed out. But the glass is half full. And if I may just make a couple of points, if you don't mind.
Yeah, please.
The first one is that I think that South Africa has got a national competitive advantage, which is the envy of many countries. What does it entail? It entails we've got a very large reservoir of mineral reserves. How has that manifested itself? Well, as other countries are suffering huge inflation and negative shocks from the increase in the price of oil, we've benefited from the increase in the price of coal. And the economists speak of the positive terms of trade. The consequence of that is that the rand has been pretty stable, which has preserved and benefited our inflation situation in the country. So that's the one thought. Massive mineral reserves. And they've benefited our economy. In fact, our economists think that we will grow at 2.3% this year. Initially, they projected 2%, but they now think 3% because of the positive terms of trade from coal and from the platinum group of minerals. The second one is we have got incredible universities and incredible research capacity. Our hero, Zebulon, the vice chancellor of Wits, is receiving that incredible award in the United Kingdom. And it's a tribute to the excellence of our universities. One of the results of that is that Johannesburg, as is Cape Town, but Johannesburg is not dissimilar to Berlin, Tel Aviv, New York, Silicon Valley, because of the intersection between universities and financial institutions, and therefore the development of fintechs. Our fintech industry in the country is extraordinary, and again, it's the envy of many countries. We've got a favorable location in that we've got a great time zone. As a result of that, our call center, our BPO industry could be amongst the best in the world. Another consideration is that we've got very strong sectors and firms. Our telcos, MTN, Vodacom, Telkom, are amongst the best in the world. And then let me just make this point before just turning to the economy quickly. Our institutions are very strong. So we've got the National Treasury, we've got the Saab, and institutions are actually very important, Clement, as you know. They're actually more important than human capital and financial capital for the growth of an economy. So strong institutions are important in that context. Just quickly on some of the economic trends that one is seeing that give you hope is, first of all, we've seen a trade surplus that's continuing to improve. Secondly, we've seen broad-based momentum in household credit growth. So consumers are borrowing. They're buying goods. They're buying fridges, homes, vehicles, even in this tough time. We're seeing improving personal income tax and VAT receipts by the authorities. The conclusion one draws from that is that there is economic activity that should be exciting us. One last point, we could add between 1 and 2% to the country's GDP growth. So I spoke about 2.3% next year. In the next couple of years, in addition to that 2.3%, we could add another 2% if and only if we as a country executed with expedition on those structural reforms. And I'd love to talk about them if you're interested. But if we got those structural reforms right as a country, we could be growing at 4%, 4 to 5%.
And I'm interested on, and I would like you to get into that, because even the favorable conditions that you mentioned, the positives that you're mentioning, they may be raised by this imminent threat that we are facing of possibly being grey listed by the International Financial Action Task Force. It's not just an issue that we are weak on anti-money laundering. It could be argued that we are generally weak on dealing with any financial crimes or corruption. So how concerned are you about this potential danger, as some have called it, because the impact is going to be even more on the financial sector?
Like everybody, I am deeply, deeply concerned because of the negative impact that grey listing would have. But let's just talk about the technicalities first, and then we'll get into how one feels about it. So you know that the Financial Action Task Force is a global body. It's an international intergovernmental organization of which South Africa is a member. Remember when we spoke about our constitution, the preamble in beautiful and lyrical language says, so that we can take our rightful place in the community of nations. And this is just one element of that. That body's focused on setting standards and promoting, just making sure that you don't have money laundering, terrorist financing, and just bad actors participating in the financial system.
Yeah.
Now, Clement, here's a fact. When Pakistan got kicked out, as we could if we don't act quickly in the next
October,
and I'll come back to that. Their economy lost close to 200 billion rand as a result of being grey listed.
Sure.
You can imagine what that does to the South African GDP if that happens. The Banking Association of South Africa and National Treasury have, in newspapers, I mean, you read the Sunday papers, but the list of things that could happen sounds something like this. We could end up being blacklisted by the UK and the European Union, which would kick us out of the global financial system. Our borrowings could become more expensive. So if the country's borrowings are more expensive, households' borrowings become more expensive. We could it becomes more expensive for banks to raise money as a result of all of this. And so we become a pariah if we don't act.
Mm.
Now, all is not lost. You know, what the country needs to do is clearly understood by the leadership. I mean, it's two basic things. The first one is we got to pass legislation that tightens anti-money laundering and anti-terrorist financing.
But how long does it take to even pass legislation?
It can be done by October.
Mm-hmm.
And we can do it. And I pray that we do it as a country, but I think we can do
it.
Do
you think they appreciate the urgency with which they need to act and do that?
I had the privilege of being at the Africa Investors Conference with the Minister of Finance. Some call him the cat in the hat, quoting Dr. Seuss.
Hmm.
And in a speech he gave, I think he indicated pretty clearly that the cabinet and the Financial Intelligence Center and the relevant ministries, from justice to all the other ministries that are relevant in this process, the leaders understand what needs to be done.
Hmm.
And I think Parliament too understands what needs to be done. Clement, the consequences of being graylisted are worse than downgrading.
Hmm.
The rand will weaken, inflation will spike, interest rates will go up. It'll be more expensive to buy food, pay for petrol, buy homes, buy cars. The country can't afford it.
No, we cannot. I mean, we could lose our credibility as an investment destination, and with our frail economy, we don't need that. So the various stakeholders have got to come in and do what they should. I don't want to be too selfish, Mr. Chabalala, so I want to take some of the voice notes coming through,
because
there are many that are coming through. Let me start with the text coming through. One person says, good morning, Clement. It's so refreshing listening to your guest talk about the positives that are happening in this country. And then Ayanda Tala says, oh, Mr. Sim Chabalala is my role model. I worked for Standard Bank for 14 years. I felt like I then wanted to take the entrepreneurial route. I promised my former manager, when things get tough, I will return to Standard Bank. My blood is blue after all. I miss those Joy of Jazz tickets. That's what Ayanda Tala also says there. Another person says, so wonderful to hear Sim on the show, Clement. I left Standard Bank almost 10 years ago. Until today, when I speak about the bank, I say we and at our bank. And this is all because of the heart Sim and the leaders at the bank have created, and a sense of being part of a movement with potential for social impact rather than a commercial entity at Standard Bank. Bravo. That's Mshengu Zukiswa. Another person says, hi, Clement. How does Sim feel about the new entrants on the market like Discovery Bank, Time Bank, etc.? How are you feeling about those?
Clement, banking is over 4,500 years old. Banks have existed since the time of the Babylonian temples. And the art of taking deposits or holding people's assets in safekeeping and then recycling those in the nature of loans and payments is something that has existed from time immemorial. My view is that that'll continue way past the 21st century. The next thing to consider is, so my point here is that there will always be changes in banking, but banking is going to remain the same.
Mm.
Taking deposits, advancing loans, making payments, giving people the ability to create wealth, preserve it, and pass it on to future generations.
Mm-hmm.
The new entrants are good for consumers because they give consumers choice. We have a high regard for our rivals, the likes of Discovery, as you point out, the likes of Time, Bank Zero, Capitec on the one extreme, and then on the other extreme are larger rivals, First Rand, APSA, Nedbank, high regard for them. But the world is changing because client demands are changing and client expectations are changing. The fintechs are entering the banking arena and the insurance and asset management arena, as are telcos, providing payments, and the ability for people to move money around. And so the traditional banker has to cope with all of that. We're deeply worried about them. But you know what? Fortune favors the big battalions.
Mm.
Financial services is a scale business, and Standard Bank is a large business with lots of firepower to be able to respond to the competitive environment. So we respect the new entrants. We worry about them, But we will beat them.
Yeah, we'll beat them. What do you think then, given just how the new entrants coming in, how even the financial sector is evolving, what do you think is the future of banking? I mean, we've seen even Standard Bank closing some of their branches. There's a lot that going on as part of this sector evolving. And I often wonder what kind of a financial sector we're going to have in like 10 years' time. What are the trends?
Clement, I don't know what it'll look like in 10 years' time, but I suspect that we will still be taking deposits. You will still need money to be paid into your account when you receive your salary. And you will still want to be sure that when you go and draw your money, make a payment, buy coffee, or, you know, buy food, buy that car that you want to buy, you want to be sure that you will get your money. So safety, soundness, and security will be important. You will still need to raise capital to build that entrepreneurial business that you want to build. Government will still need advice and structuring to build projects, water projects or electricity projects. So I do believe that the role of banks will continue, which was the point I was making about, you know, this thing is 4,500 years old. It'll continue to exist. But 99% of transactions at Standard Bank now happen on electronic media, on the app. 99%.
Wow.
So people generally do not go to the physical channels, as we call them. People go to the branch to do complicated and difficult activity, and that will continue. Therefore, the saying goes, the branch is dead, long live the branch. The branch is going to continue to exist, but it'll be different. It'll be different from what you currently have. Mm-hmm. You know, when you and I grew up, there used to be mausoleums. They were massive buildings. They're now going to be much smaller. There'll be points of presence so that people can go there to solve complicated problems, to make queries, to talk to a human being. But the activity in the branch has definitely moved forever onto these gizmos.
Yeah. I want to ask you about something that the listeners, particularly of the show, often raise. You spoke now about the role of banks and how there's still going to be a need to raise capital for business. But often when we talk on the show and we talk about loan sharks and how people run to them because they offer credit to people who wouldn't otherwise be able to access credit, people often say the banks are not that space. They've not created that space for low-income earners, especially in the informal economy. Do you think that is an option? Banks are, in fact, an option for these low-income earners?
Clement, they are. And as I said, you know, I mentioned some of our fiercest rivals, including Capitec. They've got value propositions for clients, as do we, because we compete in that part of the market as well. The important point to bear in mind, though, which is a policy point, is that commercial banks take deposits, and those deposits don't belong to the banks. And the banks need to repay those deposits on demand. So when the obligations fall due, they need to be met. The consequence of that is that if you've advanced a loan using somebody else's deposit, you have to be almost 100% certain that you will be repaid, which is why banks talk about the three C's. They say, character, is Clement a squire and somebody you can trust?
Yeah.
I'm not sure that he's a squire or not, but can he be trusted to meet his obligations as they fall due? The next C is there cash flow in the nature of, does the person work, or if it's a business, do they sell goods with certainty that they will be paid so that they can pay their obligations? And then thirdly, in the event that things fall apart and they are unable to pay, do they have assets which can be used to repay that loan so that the bank can repay that deposit? The consequence of that is that bankers and banks are naturally conservative. And so when people criticize us, one has to respectfully respond to say, yes, you know, it is true that banks are conservative, but let's understand why they are. They are because they have to have absolute certainty that they can repay deposits.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's really important. Should I go to the call? I've got many calls and WhatsApp voice notes, and we are running out of time. So let me squeeze maybe two voice notes and a call. Ruben, you are in Johannesburg. Good morning.
Morning, Clement. How are you?
I'm okay. How are you doing?
Good morning to Sim as well. You know, I was listening to Sim at the beginning of the show spell out how far Standard Bank has gone from being, after inheriting a traditionally white-owned bank with, with that type of history. I'd like to tell a little story of mine. You know, I remember 15 years ago walking my sister to school. She's a girl, you know, saying to me, you know, one day I'd like to become a chartered accountant and, you know, work for Standard Bank. And she is working at Standard Bank in the business division. So, you know, big ups to Sim and the team with the transformative measures that they're taking there.
Oh, that's wonderful. It's good to hear that, Ruben. Thank you so much for calling. You know George Sobolela?
Yes, of course.
He just sent me a WhatsApp now. Says, hey, brother, please pass my regards to Sim Tshabalala. He's one of our black excellence South Africa have, and we're very proud of his strides that he's made at Standard Bank. He must keep on, and yes, he must keep on accelerating that black business enterprise development and ensure creative funding of black businesses. So we are really proud of him. He said, I must say, send you, give you that message.
George is always kind, but the pressure never lets up.
Yeah, right? Yeah, that's George. And on Twitter, Tabo Moroka says, leaders are dealers in hope. Sim Tshabalala, thank you so much, sir. Kabelo says, this is such a huge and revealing interview, Clement. Never would I imagine that he was from my backyard of Soweto. Respectfully, I didn't know. Oh, he says, I didn't know that he was coming from Soweto. So I am proud. Another person says, hi, Clement, the transformation figures that Mr. Tshabalala speaks about make me want to move to Standard Bank. And then Klantipayi also tweets and says, we are products of affirmative action properly executed. That's what Sim Tshabalala says. And yeah, remember, he leads one of the most inclusive institutions in South Africa. That's what he's telling Clement. That's what Klanti says there. Any hopes, dreams, what do you still want to achieve? Did you know when you joined Standard Bank in the 2000s that you would be there many years later?
Yes, because I grew up in a home where people told Aesop's fables. So those three stories I told, and your caller has called it out quite nicely. Mm. They're Aesop's fables. Mm. Bide your time, do the right thing, work hard, and all will be well.
Yeah, I like that. Thank you so much for coming through, Mr. Tshabalala. This has been really wonderful. If I could, I would keep you for another 3 hours.
Thank you, Clement.
I really appreciate
it. Thank you very much. Thanks.
Thank you. It's 2 minutes before 11 o'clock.